Did you do that?
No! We didn't have passports. We were like, but we can't.
That's the reason you didn't do that. If she had her passport, just hold this in your mouth and swim on across.
Good luck.
Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me as always. How's your day, Patrick?
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Excellent. Welcome. Welcome back. Elise, how is the move going?
Ooh, yeah.
It's fine.
Moving.
Yeah, I have no furniture. Yeah.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay there, right?
But it's closing time is the name of the song.
Well, closing time.
I understand if it's closing time is the name of the song. I was making a joke, Patrick. I was changing the words for comedic effect.
But closing time still wouldn't work because that's what you do on
because you're closing.
That's fine. But all right.
No.
All right. So you are closing on your house.
Yes.
When do you buy your new house?
So there's a 4-week gap in between when we close. Theoretically, if everything goes perfectly, there's a 4-week gap in between when we close on our house and then close on our new house. So we are going to be in an RV in a trailer park
at Big Ben?
4 weeks. No, unfortunately.
RV life.
Yes. Yes.
Wow, that's pretty exciting.
There's got to be a TLC show or something about RV life, right? That's got to exist.
Oh, for sure. My wife has watched it, I can tell you that much. She's watching a show now about homesteaders on Discovery.
Ooh.
Like 1800s homesteaders?
These are people that want to live off the grid, basically.
Sure.
And there's a family that goes around and helps them. And she's always like, I think we can do this.
So let me ask
you. Spoiler alert, we can't.
How do you get a hold of the family that helps you get off the
grid?
Great
question.
Off the grid?
I have no idea how it works. But
also, isn't being like on a cable TV show kind of putting yourself back on the grid? Like,
you know,
that's about
well,
on the grid.
There's one reason and one reason only, and that's money. That's why they're doing this.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But they bring these people in. They ask them to come.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell them what to do. And they said, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But like, you asked them to be here. They didn't just show up. You know, like, you have obvious problems. It's so frustrating every time I watch it with you. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. That's a source of frustration.
You feel it, right? You just, like, feel the tension in the room right now.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, well, we got some news.
He just wants to move right past.
Right.
I am.
A few weeks ago was International Women's Day.
Yeah.
Did you know?
Yeah. Like, last week.
Well,
I guess 2 weeks ago.
Thank you both for recognizing me for that.
You know, I feel like we recognize you year round, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's always
every week is International Women's Day here on the podcast.
Plus, you would be more of a national woman that we would want to recognize. I'm recognizing the global community.
Yeah, every week is women in this room on the podcast, and you are the greatest woman in this room whenever we record the podcast.
Thank you.
So on International Women's Day, Burger King gets in a little bit of trouble on the social meds.
Did they change to Burger Queen for a day?
They did not. That would have been better, I think.
What did they do? I remember this.
They tweeted out, women belong in the kitchen.
Yikes.
Uh-huh.
Now,
I don't think that means what they think it means.
No.
Now, I'm gonna spoil it. They followed up with another tweet saying, like, and we want more women in culinary school that are underrepresented as chefs,
great chef,
kind of thing.
Yep.
Like that was kind of what they were
had
trying to say.
Really
but those are
intentions.
Two different tweets, and Twitter does not work that way for most people, because you can just share
one of those
tweets. So women belong in the kitchen. So Elise, as an international woman, how do you feel about women belong in? Well, you've traveled internationally, right?
And you exist in the world.
You're both national and international at the same time.
Yes.
You know, so
I live in that in between space. You know.
Yeah. How do you feel, Burger King? Women belong in the kitchen.
I mean, I feel like I'm so far beyond being offended by anything like that at this point.
That's like small potatoes. You know?
Yeah,
I got a bigger fish to fry than Burger King telling me to get in the kitchen.
Right, real dumb marketing move. I feel very sorry for the person who published that tweet.
Poor choice of line break for the tweet.
Well, right.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I feel like they were going for something like the women belong in the House and the Senate type thing. You know, like that's really cute and pithy, but like women belong in the kitchen. Okay,
because that's based on a gendered stereotype that's been used against women.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit more offended that they're equating themselves with like a culinary institute.
Yeah.
You know, nobody belongs in a Burger King.
Yeah, like, that's cute, Burger King.
That's judgy. Nobody belongs in a Burger King.
Yeah.
You know, they got some heat for it.
I would imagine so.
Flame grilled heat.
Oh, there it is. He was sitting on that one for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they have since deleted the tweet. And, you know, they did apologize. And I think that they are trying to say, like, it was coming from a place of genuine support of women. We just got it wrong. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. We blew it. Yeah. Our bad.
Yeah. That's fine. I mean, the part about women being underrepresented in culinary school, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'll say this. I would have no problem protesting Burger King. If we all want to get on the bandwagon of, hey, let's
I feel like I've been protesting already.
I already don't go to Burger King. Let's do it. So,
yeah. I'm on. Yeah.
By default, I've protested.
Yeah.
Why have other food-related news?
Okay.
I have back-to-back news. Have you ever eaten seafood from a restaurant?
Sure.
What kind of restaurant?
Any restaurant.
Like a fast food restaurant?
Any restaurant, do you order a seafood? I usually get the
fish sandwich from McDonald's. Yeah, okay.
I've been to a Long John Silver's
sooner in my life. I love Long John Silver's.
See, you guys are
I've been there more than a Burger King.
Keeping it afloat. I've always wondered.
Long John Silver's Hush Puppies. Oh, my Lord. It is a spiritual experience.
Look, you get the fish filet, chicken tender basket. You get a little bit of both. You get some fries.
See, the split actually works really well for our family because Amanda does not like fish, but she really likes Long John Silver's batter, and so she likes the chicken, but I don't really like the chicken because I don't like the way it's cooked, but I love the fish. Oh, yeah. We're big fans. I'm not saying I'm proud of it, but I'm a fan.
All right.
Please don't tell me that I have to stop going to Long John Silver's.
What's your go-to fish at a restaurant?
If you really go-to fish. Yeah.
Salmon. I don't really eat fish.
So. Salmon would be a pretty solid one. Sometimes it's like a sea bass or something like that. Though sea bass is often like impersonated. Like they sell something as sea bass, but it's not actually sea bass.
They have a fake mustache and glasses.
Exactly.
It's me, sea bass.
Shrimp, scallops. Those are seafoods, not fish particularly, but yeah.
Elise, do you have a go-to seafood?
Salmon, blackened redfish. Ooh, just fish, right? Is that what you're asking about?
Yeah,
or?
Sure.
Seafood, yeah.
Oh, I mean, I love fried oysters.
Oh, sure. Any seafood fried.
I mean.
That's really anything fried. So
calamari,
Ooh,
fried.
Yes, calamari.
I don't really like seafood.
Occasionally sushi, but I'm a sushi novice,
I like all of it. Okay. TBH, crab.
Crab. I could go for some crab legs and a little thing
crab
of butter.
Cake.
Ooh, yeah. Now we're talking. Okay, forget the podcast. Game over. Everybody have a nice week. We're glad hope you enjoyed this episode. We're going to go get lunch. And
Not at Long John Silver's.
We should stop recording over lunch.
Seafood fraud happening on a vast global scale.
I told you, seafood fraud. Chilean sea bass. You know wearing
where
the mustache.
It's gonna start? Long John Silver's.
No, that's not fraud.
It's Long John Silver's seafood.
Everybody knows that that's what they're getting. It's not fraud if everybody's aware that it's happening.
The average amount of mislabeled seafood is 40% of all seafood is either mislabeled intentionally or unintentionally the world. Seafood fraud. And I think part of it is because like none of
around
us
the world,
really...
So that's like...
In the United States, it's 40%, by the way. It is higher in the
We're
United States.
The average. Okay,
it
good.
Is higher in the United States and Europe than it is in South America and Asia. So you would think we should have more regulation here than they would do in those places
we
of the world.
We don't know our fishes what they are, though.
I think that's probably the real thing. Like they can just point. If you're like, I want a fish, they throw down any fish in front of you, you're like, this is probably right? I don't know.
That sounds good.
I'm not going to be able to distinguish. A trout from, I don't know, something else.
Yeah, if I gave you a cod and a halibut, would you be able to identify which
absolutely
one?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But I could pick out like a salmon.
Yeah, salmon is probably the one that
or
has
tuna.
A distinct flavor.
I'd try just for the halibut.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, what do you think? If there's more women in the kitchen, less seafood fraud?
Absolutely.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't get seafood. Because of this. I want to bring awareness. No, I just don't like the taste of it.
Yeah.
But I would get probably a fried catfish or fried shrimp.
Oh, sure.
Fried I would be fine with that. With either one of those.
There was a show on Food Network for a while called Restaurant Stakeout. And they would send like undercover diners in and like work behind the scenes when owners thought that like people were stealing from them or whatever. And there was one episode where the food manager was running a deal with the... the food delivery guy. Where basically the food manager was paying for sea bass... but getting some like much cheaper fish, and then he and the food guy were splitting the profits.
Yes.
Oh.
This is certainly a literal case of catfishing.
So he groans at the halibut, but he's sitting there on catfish.
That was pretty good. All right, I'm just gonna say
that. He just wanted to downplay mine so that his felt better.
Because I knew that one was coming. Yeah. So, those are our food-related news. I don't know. Do you cook seafood? I don't know where I'm going with this, but...
We cook salmon. We cook, yeah. We don't cook shrimp before.
Yeah,
Well, how do you know? Maybe you're... Definitely Long John Silver's. Who knows what that is, but it is delicious.
But I know that going into it. I don't feel like
my expectations of fine dining are very low walking into a Long John Silver's. All right.
I don't get it.
Let's go into our...
Just get the Krispies. Like, don't even worry about the fish. Just get the crispy batter.
Just the fried batter. I want to eat the fried.
You can order a basket of just the fried thing. That's a little off the menu thing. I've not done it, but I've heard that you can do
that. Oh my gosh. That's like...
Probably they scoop it off the floor and put it in a basket. Yep. Like,
and then they just, you know, give you a card for a cardiologist.
Oh, so several years ago, I did see a video of... it was like a mouse in a fast food restaurant that just... was trying to escape and took a dive into the fryer. Poor little mouse. But that's probably Long John Silver's, really. But it's delicious. All right, we are going to talk about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I need to be forgiven for all this hate towards Long John Silver's that's being thrown my way.
We need to be forgiven. I also like Long John Silver's.
You need to be forgiving me, I think.
Sure.
I don't think that's how this works.
All right, well, forgiveness.
We'll get into it. Well, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's how it's works.
When we say we're going to have a podcast about forgiveness, we're actually going to, you know, teach Elise how to forgive us.
An airing of grievances, yeah.
Right. We got a lot of problems.
I thought it was International Women's Day.
All right. This is from Relevant Magazine.
All right.
Is forgiveness the Bible's most controversial teaching?
Mm.
Yes.
Mm, maybe.
Yes. That's the pod.
Maybe.
Bye.
Boom. Okay, well, we'll see you next week. If you like what you heard here. So this is from one of the writers saying, like, he used to lead Bible studies for college students, and sometimes it was hard getting discussion going, but whenever they led about forgiveness, people would become passionately engaged about this idea of what am I expected to forgive those that have hurt and wronged me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Yes, you are.
And what does that look like, or how does that work? That's tough. So
yeah, that's harder. But baseline, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's where, like, maybe we're going to get into it, but I don't know that I'd call it controversial, because controversial makes it sound like at different points in the Bible you're going to find different stances on this. And forgiveness is one of those things that's like, no, it's pretty clear. Like, Bible says forgive people. Like that. And it's hard. It's definitely one of the hardest teachings.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I would call it controversial, because I feel like it's straightforward. Like, nobody's going to look at the Bible and come away saying, oh, the Bible says I shouldn't forgive people.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think that controversial is probably... can mean two different things. So one, you're saying that there's an inner controversy within the workings of Scripture.
Yeah. Right.
And then there's an outer controversy of, like, we read all those things and want to put qualifiers and asterisks and all these things attached to it.
Right. Yeah.
Like... LGBTQ issues are controversial teachings of Scripture, because they, you know, there are places where Scripture seems to contradict itself and where we have to, like, sift through and really work at that.
Sure.
Forgiveness is pretty straightforward. We don't always want to accept it. We want to put qualifiers on it. We want to try to figure that out, which becomes controversy within ourselves of how we do this.
Yeah.
Right.
But the Bible's pretty straightforward. You should forgive people.
Yeah, and I think most of us agree with the idea. We're like, we should
forgive the concept
people.
Of forgiveness.
Yeah.
As long as we're being forgiven.
Sure, but none of us know how to do it. Like, what does that actually mean? I think that's where it breaks down, is we have different opinions on what that looks like, and I'm not sure that many of us really have a handle on what that actually looks like from a biblical perspective.
All right, well, he has 9 myths
about
forgiveness in this article. Yeah, so we're going to go through those 9 myths. Let's see what we have.
All right.
So myth
number one.
Myth number one.
Or do we start at the top, myth number 9?
You know, we'll do like a countdown, like a top 10 list.
I just want to know which way we're going.
What's the biggest myth?
We're going to start in the middle.
Okay. Number 4.
And work our way out. It's like a bell curve.
All right, good.
Myth number one. Forgiveness is out about the other person. Truth. Forgiveness is about you.
Hmm.
So what do you think about this first one?
I think this has been true in my experience. But I think this is a uniquely... Not uniquely, but this is a particular Christian experience of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, an old adage is like, refusing to forgive someone is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that there is this idea of, like, forgiveness is not about their healing, it's about your healing.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that there's a lot of reality to this. And I think if anyone's had to experience the act of forgiving, especially a great hurt,
mm-hmm.
thrust upon them, usually by someone that should not have done that. Like, mm-hmm. somebody who professed to care about us or yeah. should, by nature of the relationship, care about us. It can be really, really difficult, but forgiveness is really about my own inner healing
yeah.
versus their right. inner healing.
Finding yeah. a way to cope with the situation, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
All right. So we're all on board with that one?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
That was good. That was easy.
Yeah.
No controversy.
Are you easing us into this, or are they all
Number four. I mean, that's the high of the bell curve, so that's, we can all get behind
strap
that.
Strap in.
All right. Number five.
Well, this is number two.
Okay, four, five, three.
We weren't actually doing the bell curve.
Oh, yeah. All right. Come on, people. Yeah. Me.
If you forgive someone, you should forget it ever happened. That's the myth.
Mm-hmm.
Truth, forgiveness, and forgetting are two very different things.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I do think this is where people, it feels like an easy out for people, right? Yeah. I mean, we look at them and we're like, well, I don't want to forget that.
Yeah.
At no point does Jesus say, or any other part of the scripture say, forget that ever happened.
Yeah.
Just forgive them over and over and over. You know, always forgive them, but doesn't mean you forget it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you keep putting yourself in the place to mm-hmm. allow them to continue to do that.
Well, and I think part of why this is challenging is because we say forgive and forget
mm-hmm.
often. Like,
I don't say it.
Like, well, I mean,
I want to be clear here. I oppose that saying on all fronts.
I'm saying we as a Christian culture
yeah.
have that ingrained into our understanding of forgiveness, mm-hmm. whether true or not, and it's not true.
Right.
But like, that is part of like, forgiveness is about forgetting.
Nope.
Is kind of those two things attached.
Those forgive and forget are things that people who want to be forgiven say. Because they want you to forget that they have ever or done anything to you. And that is not what forgiveness
yeah.
is a bit
yeah.
about. Because so, forgiveness is not about them. Forgiveness is not about the person who did the thing wrong. Forgiveness is about you.
Yeah.
Okay. But since that's so intertwined, I think, especially in our culture, then what does it actually look like to forgive somebody practically without forgetting that the thing that they did or sweeping it under the rug? What does that look like?
Well, I guess I want to clarify what you mean by what it looks like. For me, I mean, forgiveness is much more about an internal understanding of, you know, am I constantly looking at this person who's caused me harm and letting that anger boil up inside of me? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't want to say just being triggered, but, you know, am I seeing someone and just immediately impacted by their presence?
Yeah.
Like, that's probably a sign that I haven't forgiven whatever is going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also see someone and wish the best for them and, you know, hope that God continues to redeem them and work in them. And I can say, and I'm not going anywhere near them
and
again.
And I can have a boundary. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah. I think healthy boundaries is a huge part mm-hmm. of setting forgiveness yep. for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think part of that, like, the idea of, like, just forget it and not forgive it would be, an abuser would say these types of things. Just say, pretend this abuse never actually happened.
Yeah.
And then we can just move forward in this relationship, yeah. which may have cyclical abuse attached
mm-hmm.
to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the expectation is you're just always supposed to forget that it actually mm-hmm. happened. It's not what forgiveness actually is.
Right.
And forgiveness and accountability, two very, very different things.
Right.
So, and which we're going to get into.
Yeah. I'd also, sorry, I'm going to add one more thing, you know. Forgiveness would say that you're not going to constantly bring that thing up,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, let's say that I was, I'm trying to think of a good example. Let's say that I'm a spouse and the spouse committed some act of infidelity, but we've agreed to work through it, right? I'm not going, if I've truly forgiven that person,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to continually say, well, I can't trust you to go because this, and
sure,
this.
Sure,
right?
Like every time you have an argument. Go
right,
back
we go
to
like,
that
well,
thing.
You know,
yeah,
I can't
yeah.
believe anything. Yeah, you know,
right.
That's not forgiveness, mm-hmm. right? You're still holding on. Now, you're not going to forget that,
right?
And you know, you as a couple are going to have set up boundaries to make sure that doesn't happen again, and
sure.
remember, like, hey, this is what led to this sort of thing. We're going
mm-hmm.
to take healthy steps to go forward together. But that's it's different in
yeah.
that sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. All right.
Myth three.
Myth number one.
I can forgive them while still secretly living in bondage to regret and shame for my own failures.
Ooh.
That's a myth?
That's a myth.
That's the myth.
Yeah.
That I can forgive them while secretly living in bondage to...
And to regret shame. And shame for my own failures.
Okay.
You want the truth?
Sure.
Here we go.
No.
Our ability... You can't handle the truth. Our ability to give forgiveness is connected to the depth of forgiveness we've received.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I hear that. I hear where you're coming from on that.
I am actually going to disagree a little bit with him.
I was going to say, can
yeah.
you elaborate?
I don't think I'm fully on board, but I can hear where he's coming from. So why don't you expand for us?
I think he is saying, and this I do agree with, this part of like, we as Christians believe Christ's death and resurrection is the greatest act of love and forgiveness to me and humanity. So right. mm-hmm. if I acknowledge that the forgiveness God has given me for everything I have done, you know, that empowers me to forgive those around me.
Yeah.
And so I think he's saying it's hard to forgive those around you if you can't acknowledge you've been forgiven by Jesus. Those two things would be connected. I think there are plenty of people in this world who are not Christians who can tap into forgiveness for those who have hurt and abused them. So that's where I would say I disagree here. Because I think this is kind of like saying forgiveness is a uniquely Christian thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's true.
I do think that tapping it, like from a Christian perspective and from a Christian standpoint, if we can tap into that forgiveness for our lives, we are better able to forgive others, right?
Yeah.
If we understand ourselves as forgiven, if we understand the depth of which God has poured out love and grace upon us, then the desire becomes to want to share and spread mm-hmm. that to others. But that is the Christian experience of forgiveness. That is not the only way to forgive.
Right.
So I do hear where he's coming from, and that enhances the forgiveness experience. Mm. I'm better able to forgive because that's a piece of my experience, but it's not the... I think you can hold on to plenty of your own stuff and forgive somebody at the same time. Those are not mutually exclusive.
I mean, I think that, you know, I think we all experience like shame, and I forget what the other word was, you know, regret and shame. And I feel like that can actually create empathy for somebody else that you're trying to forgive, because it's an understanding that they're also probably experiencing shame and regret and have stuff, you know, because we have that stuff.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think experiencing the power of grace in my own life hopefully leads me to want to have other people experience that same power of grace.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I think the question can be raised by this. If I'm unwilling to forgive, and we could say maybe great levels of abuse, we can kind of push aside for now, minor offenses against me or my loved ones, how much do I trust in the grace and love of Jesus Christ for my own sins and failures? Like, is it, if it's so easy for me to hold on to anger over minor offenses, I would say maybe you really have not dived deep into your own forgiveness given to you by Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that has a connection there. So, again, I think if you have experienced abuse or major hurt,
that can be different.
We're going to get into that in a little bit here on one of these myths, so that I definitely agree with them. You know, that's not necessarily the same thing. Okay, well, myth number, what are we, four?
I don't know.
Why not?
Yeah, a myth.
A myth.
Give it to us.
Yes. The people in the Bible didn't need a lot of forgiveness.
Ooh.
Hard path.
Yeah.
I think if you've been listening to our walk through scripture,
you're
definitely gonna. I think you would be like, this doesn't hold up at all.
Yeah,
yeah. The people of the Bible are as dysfunctional.
I mean, you've got to read like two pages, and you find like, oh wow, okay. Like, you have to make it past the first chapter, and you start to figure it out.
I think if you believe this, you probably maybe read a children's Bible in Sunday school that kind of omits the messy and dirty parts a little bit. To make it safer and cleaner for children. But every story of every biblical hero is littered with...
somebody getting murdered.
Yeah, murder, adultery, lies, deceit. They are severely broken individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The heroes of scripture are often not heroes. Yeah. So,
the anti-hero.
Yeah. Or really, they're humans. Mm-hmm. You know, they're if I was in that same situation, maybe I would find myself in the similar predicaments that they would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you were an ancient king who had the power of everything, maybe you would be tempted to commit adultery very, very easy, you know.
Slash murder
to cover it
that
up.
Came second.
You know, those things, you know, again.
He only committed murder to cover up the adultery, right?
I feel like the murder is the bigger deal here, but okay.
Sure. Yeah. They're both wrong.
Yeah.
Neither is good.
Let's I'm not arguing in favor for either one of them. But...
yeah, adultery is fine. Yeah. Just don't commit murder.
So, it's really more like closer to rape, too, but
right.
carry on. Yeah.
We're talking about David and Bathsheba, which will come up in our next
episode.
Right, yeah.
Spoiler.
We're prepping this convo.
That's going to be fun. That comes right the day after Easter. So happy Easter, everybody.
Happy Easter, probably. Maybe we'll call an audible. We'll see. but probably.
Oh, here's a fun fact. I once left the church over a Sunday school lesson on David and Bathsheba.
That sounds like a story we need to unpack. Do you have some forgiveness that we need to explore there?
I'm fine.
I'm fine.
Let's save that. Let's save that for our discussion when we get there.
Yeah.
So that's a spoiler for what's coming. Or a little preview, a teaser. Mm-hmm. Myth 5 or 6 or 7, I don't know where we're on. Forgiveness is a decision, an act of the will. That's the myth.
Mm.
Truth, forgiveness is a decision and a process.
Mm.
What do we think here?
I think both are true. I mean, both start with forgiveness is a decision. I think that piece is, you do have to make a decision to forgive. I'm not really clear on what he means, but so forgiveness is a decision, a process of the will.
Act of the will versus the process.
I don't know exactly what he means as a distinction there. And I apologize. I'm assuming this is a man who wrote this, but I don't know that you ever told us if it was a man or woman who wrote
it's a man.
So, okay. All right.
Of course it is.
So I don't. And on International Women's Day.
Come on.
If you want to write something about forgiveness, we'll read it.
So I don't know how he's distinguishing between these two. I do agree that forgiveness is a process. You know, some days I'm going to feel like I'm doing a better job of forgiving people than others, and some I'm going to have gone for years, and then something's going to bubble up, and I'm going to have to be consciously forgiving them again. But I don't know how that distinguishes from an act of will, because I'm also willing myself to continue to work on that process. Sure. So I don't know how he's distinguishing.
Yeah. I mean, I would say you can't really will yourself out of your emotions about something, right? Mm-hmm. So that would be where the process comes in. Is it takes time to get over the emotional response to stuff. You can't just say, I'm not going to feel that anymore.
Yeah.
You're going to feel it.
I think you might be misinterpreting a little bit what he's trying to get. And I'm not saying he's doing a very good job.
I'm saying straightforward that I don't understand what he's getting at. Okay. So that's I think maybe
based on our general histories, maybe even our relationship with our parents and families, we might come at this a little bit differently. Because I think you're saying like the act of forgiveness versus for me I'm reading this the act of forgiving one person. So those are two different things, right? Like me forgiving as I go through the world versus one person forgiving hurt or anger from another person is very, very different. So that both start with the decision. I want to forgive this person. I think what he is getting at here with the act of the will is like, and then I'm just gonna do it. And like this idea of like, I said it, here it is. It's kind of like running a marathon. I just got to go run and race this thing. But a process is more inclined to that emotional aspect of it, of I'm still going to experience tremendous hurt, anxiety, and fear attached to this. And those things will continue to be worked on potentially the rest of my life, kind of a thing. So I think maybe the act of the will has a finality attached to it, and the process does not necessarily have a finality attached to it.
Yeah, which I'm fully on board with. Yeah. The language I didn't quite follow. So.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. All right, next one, whichever one number this may be.
Number 12.
For the nine myths.
Refusing to forgive shows I value accountability.
This is the myth. Refusing to forgive shows I value accountability. Okay.
And it's true. This one is interesting here. Refusing to forgive can I guess we're going to qualify this, can mean you're lusting for revenge and struggling to trust God to do the best thing.
Some strong language.
Yeah. And he has this qualifier, can mean that.
Yeah.
Not like it does mean that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do we think here?
All right. I don't. Say the myth again. Get the language of the myth again.
Refusing to forgive shows I value accountability.
Yeah, I don't agree with that at all.
Okay.
I agree that is a myth. I don't think that refusing to forgive has anything to do with accountability, because you can hold, as we've previously established, you can hold people accountable and forgive, because forgiving is not forgetting.
Yeah.
And so I think that is a myth completely. I think I hear what he's trying to get at with this second piece, with this idea that it can lead to this lust for revenge. I think sometimes we mask our desire for revenge in this idea of I'm trying to hold someone accountable, or I'm just not ready to forgive. You know, revenge doesn't always come out as like, you know, violence. You know, sometimes revenge is just I still want this person to have pain, or I still want this person to, you know, suffer some picture of what I've suffered or something.
Sure. You know. Comeuppance.
Right, yeah. And forgiveness genuinely does at some level mean that we begin to wish well for that person. And that is a huge step and is really, really hard. I don't mean that to say like, oh, this is easy, but That's what forgiveness ultimately draws to. And so if you're just sitting there saying, no, I cannot forgive them, I will not forgive them, I can see that's an element of that.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like this goes back to us not really having a good handle on what forgiveness actually is. Mm-hmm. I think so many of us default to it means like giving them a pass or like things going back to the way that they were before or whatever grievance, you know? So I can see how we would say refusing to forgive means I value accountability if you think that forgiveness means giving somebody a pass. Mm-hmm. And I also think that it is okay for those things in that step to wanting to wish well for somebody to take time. That's part of that process that he was referring to.
Yeah. Now, I do agree, you know, Jesus, well, if forgiveness is one of the most controversial statements or concepts of the Bible, maybe the most controversial statement from Jesus himself is love your enemies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's going to be a lot to take in and figure out what that looks like, what that means for everybody's personal life. But this idea that if I'm trying to forgive someone, it is saying like, and I want to lay down my right for revenge, that I have a right to hurt you back. Mm-hmm. Like that is what I have a right to do. Mm-hmm. I have a right to hurt you the way you've hurt me. And forgiveness is part of that, is saying, and I'm laying down that right. And so it's not saying what you did was okay. It's not saying like, the hurt I experienced didn't exist or it's gone. It's just saying, I think part of it is saying, I should be able to hurt you back, but I won't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's a powerful thing attached to forgiveness. That idea of, you've caused me pain. I should be able to do the same thing to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But letting that go is saying, and it's saying, and I trust God to handle the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is tough, and that's a tough part of that process. But I think one of the things we can kind of see without forgiveness in those kinds of situations where you hurt me and I just hurt you back, mm-hmm. Well, nobody ever feels like, well, I think you hurt me the appropriate amount, now we're good.
Right.
Everybody always will perceive it as, you actually hurt me a little bit worse than I hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to now cause you some pain
mm-hmm.
to make it even.
Right.
And then it just gets cyclical and keeps going and going. And all of a sudden, we're all like Capulets and Montagues or Hatfields and McCoys mm-hmm. or Burger King and women. You know, like we're all these things.
Yikes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or people with taste buds. Yes. Yes. You know, so without somebody saying, I refused my right to hurt you back, this is what the world looks like, right? Mm-hmm. Like it just keeps going and cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I think that that's very, very difficult. And I think that's why I point before part of that process.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a process you don't fully complete in this lifetime.
Maybe.
Yeah. Let's see. Whatever one we're on next here.
Here we go.
Right.
I think this is 7.
Very professional podcasting.
Could have numbered these. Did not.
In our defense, neither did this guy. So
neither did the editors of Relevant Magazine.
Yeah.
Right. Out here doing the least.
Yeah. Forgiveness and reconciliation are the same thing. That's the myth. Truth. Forgiveness and reconciliation are very different things.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
With which one? The myth or the truth?
With the truth.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. I agree with his statement that there's a myth and there's a truth. Yeah, I agree with
Expand on that.
I did. I agreed. So I think reconciliation requires both parties, and forgiveness does not, right? Mm-hmm. Reconciliation requires the offender to apologize and to potentially offer some sort of restitution, or at least make the effort to say, I'm amending my actions, or I'm changing my actions. Mm-hmm. There's a part on both sides. So I'm thinking, and we've talked about this before, but the Truth and Reconciliation Commission from South Africa after apartheid, right? Mm-hmm. Part of that process was that both sides had to be willing to enter into this relationship to hear the stories and to offer amnesty. Neither mm-hmm. side could hold on to grudges and say, oh, no, you actually still hurt me, right? And so now we get to hurt you. They both had to enter into that process together. Yeah. And I think that's what reconciliation is about. Forgiveness is still on me.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that you can have reconciliation without genuine forgiveness
mm-hmm.
or without at least moves towards forgiveness, but you can definitely have forgiveness without reconciliation because you might have an unrepentant abuser and you're not going to reconcile with that person.
Yeah.
But hopefully if you're moving forward, you're able to look back and forgive them in some way, even whatever that looks like in the long run.
Yeah, I think that's a a good understanding of that. And I think that that apartheid stuff is healthy and yeah. part of it. Yeah, I don't think this
Did
is
you
one of
say
those
apartheid myth. Was healthy. I think we no, need no, to clarify
that apartheid reconciliation.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yikes.
I don't think this is part of what his thing is like. But I like what you kind of said. Forgiveness is really about my journey yeah. and not reconciliation is about our journey mm-hmm. together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because forgiveness, and this is not one of his myths, does not depend on another person saying they're sorry.
Right.
That's not part of this process. Yeah. That's a reconciliation process, not a forgiveness process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe that helps the forgiveness process. Mm-hmm. The reconciliation helps that part of me lay down my right to revenge. But they're not the same.
Yeah.
You can forgive without that person ever even knowing that they've even hurt you.
Yep.
Or even acknowledging it ever. So, yep. Yeah. Any other thoughts here? Forgiveness and reconciliation.
I already shared my thoughts. Don't leave me.
I'm riding on your coattails, so.
Yeah. I can say, like, a little bit personal story. When I was 13, my dad left. And there was a lot of hurt and a lot of anger from me towards him for a large portion of my life. Almost 20 years later, he and I met for coffee, and I was able to tell him that I forgave him and have some form of reconciliation. You know, I can say my dad and I don't have necessarily the same relationship that you might have with your dads or mm-hmm. you as a listener might have with your dad, but I did text him last night. Filled him in on what's going on in our life, kind of have this kind of, we do have a relationship
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. a connection. And part of that was I needed to forgive him outside of him. And that he did not need to play a part in that role.
Mm-hmm.
And that forgiveness wasn't just healing our relationship, but in reality it was healing me.
Mm-hmm.
And then reconciliation was, this is now, how do we restore a relationship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, that might not be the same relationship it used to be. Or that that might not ever happen again. But that doesn't mean it's not the process of reconciliation. So I think that I personally can identify that these are two different things.
Yeah.
Myth 8.
Mm-hmm.
I need to tell, and I know that because we're reaching the end of our page.
Excellent.
I can see the end.
Yep.
I need to tell the person I forgave them.
Uh-huh.
Truth, you don't necessarily need to tell them you forgave them.
Yeah, you don't. I think we just hit on that, right? I mean, it's an internal process. Sometimes they never even know they hurt you. I mean, you know,
so
it might be necessary for me to forgive, a celebrity or a politician or a news source or something that has no idea I even exist, right?
I mean,
but that might be somebody that I need to forgive. Maybe I need to forgive, people who commit terrorist acts against a country or that injure somebody I love. And they're never going to know who I am. But you don't have to tell them, but it's still a process that we need to go through.
Yeah.
I think we sort of like to use that as currency in our relationships, though. Like, I forgave you,
mm-hmm.
so, you need to give me a pass on this. I think that's, I don't know, I think
that could
like
be another myth.
That.
Forgiveness is not currency.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah.
Add one to the list.
Sure.
Mr. Van left it off.
That's 8.5. Yeah. Well, especially because, especially if you're dealing with systematic abuse or major hurts mm-hmm. in your life, the person who gave that to you could die.
Yeah.
Without having any kind of reconciliation mm-hmm. or moments or these beautiful moments of forgiveness. So if this is not true, what do you do then?
Mm-hmm.
If I can't tell them, then you'll always have to bear that with you. Because again, forgiveness is not about that other person, not even about the relationship. It's really about your own internal healing.
Mm-hmm.
So having that attached to that is important. And I think sometimes we can say, we can use forgiveness as a little bit of like, this is my way of kind of hurting you back.
Yeah.
I'm a better person than you, obviously. You really, really hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
But look how forgiving.
But I'm willing to forgive you.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of like, I'm kind of digging the knife in a little bit just
mm-hmm.
to remind you of how awful you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So number 9, forgiveness is something I can do on my own. That's the myth, the truth. We need help processing the pain and letting go.
Hmm. I think I'm on board with this.
Yeah.
I think you can do forgiveness on your own.
Yeah.
I mean, like, theoretically possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is still part of, you know, you have to take the action. Like, no amount of, you know, support is going to make you forgive someone. Mm-hmm. You have to make that choice. So forgiveness is still very much an individual choice. But it's supported through community, it's supported through people. And, you know, maybe this is professional help. Maybe this is just friends and loved ones who walk with you through difficult times who can help you process that. But it's still very much an individual choice.
Yeah.
You know, the old lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, so to speak.
Sure.
Which I've never actually done, but I assume is true. I don't know.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
I guess.
People hand me things. I don't always drink it. So why would a horse be any different?
You're not supposed to drink something somebody just hands to you. It's like rule number one.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, you hand me anything, I'm drinking it. It doesn't matter what it is.
Cool.
Here on International Women's Day.
Car keys, drinking it. Like, anything that's put in my hand is going in my mouth.
Soup. You know, like,
yeah, it's just
Patrick's toddler's approach to life. Yeah. If it's in my hand, it's going in my mouth.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's some truth here, especially, you know, again, forgiving somebody for cutting in front of you in line or driving erratically when you're stressed out. I mean, those things, maybe you don't need therapy or prayer or meditation to get through.
And you haven't driven behind some of the people I've driven behind, but that's...
I've driven behind you.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, yeah.
And let me tell you.
He's in therapy.
I forgive you.
Yeah, as well you should.
I forgive you.
I've earned your forgiveness.
Well, let me just tell you, I'm in therapy. but
I don't think that, like, the need to go to therapy for long or short term or confiding in friends or relatives is in any way signs of weakness.
No.
That's ridiculous. And I think sometimes we have that mentality, sometimes especially placed on men. We have this kind of John Wayne attitude that, like, you alone can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't, then you're not manly enough.
Yeah.
Like, and really, it's not about forgiveness. It's not about reconciliation. It's about taking all that hurt and anger and just burying it deep inside you and pretending like it never happened.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think that that...
It's about forgetting without actually forgiving.
Yeah, that is not, in actuality, I think, healthy for anyone. That's actually, and I don't think that's a manly way to handle it either.
No.
Ooh.
I think that is a false sense of manhood.
Whoa.
True one, yes.
Whoa.
Heard it here first.
On International Women's Day, let me bring it back to men.
Great. Love it. What else you got?
So I do think that this process. Any other thoughts on forgiveness as we're wrapping up here?
I have a great book that I'd like to recommend about forgiveness. It's called The Sunflower by a gentleman named Simon Wiesenthal. I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing that correctly.
Ooh.
What?
Wiesenthal.
Yeah, Wiesenthal, yeah.
It's a toughie.
It's a name. It's, but so Simon Wiesenthal was a prisoner in a concentration camp in Nazi Germany. And shares this experience of being brought to a dying Nazi soldier and the dying Nazi soldier asking him to forgive him, the Nazi soldier, for these atrocities that he committed against Jewish people on this soldier's deathbed. And then, so that you kind of get that story in the beginning of the book, this is all like an actual thing that actually happened to Simon Wiesenthal. And so he kind of shares his reflection on it. And then he got a whole bunch of theologians and scholars from across faiths and across backgrounds to write essays on what he should have done and how we should offer forgiveness in that moment. And it's fascinating to read about the different understandings of forgiveness from so many different cultures and backgrounds, because some people will come down on the plate or on the place of you absolutely should forgive him because he's, you know, showing repentance and this, that, and the other. And others will say it's not your place to forgive because you're not the one who was wrong. And others will say, you know, forgiveness is between him and God. And, you know, it's just a fascinating read.
Yeah.
It's super depressing for most of the book, just FYI. Not like a, you know.
It's like The Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
I don't know anything about The Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
Watch it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. No striped pajamas for me. But it's really fascinating, and I recommend it.
Okay. That sounds great. I also recommend something on forgiveness, too.
Oh, sure. What do you got?
But I'm going to recommend a movie.
Okay.
I think it's based on a book.
Is it the book version or the movie version of The Sunflower?
Yeah, yeah. It's called Sunflower. The Sunflower. Great movie. No, this is a movie on the other front of the war, so not in Europe. It would be on in Japan.
The whole war was... Oh, okay. That was...
The whole war. The world war.
This would be... it's called To End All Wars.
Okay.
It is about Americans in a POW camp run by Japanese soldiers.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is strongly faith-based movie. So I don't think the creators and actors are necessarily Christian, but it is a Christian's memoir of his experience there. So it is has so much to do with forgiveness, redemption, and the power of faith in these moments. And the movie does end with the real life person portrayed by an actor and the real life POW camp guard, you know, who in the movie is portrayed by an actor, but their real life counterpoints as old men meeting together and sharing acts of like forgiveness and relationship with one another. So it is really powerful and kind of touching, you know, not for kids. It's a war movie, you know, and it's largely in a
POW. The Sunflower, also not a bedtime story, just, you know, FYI. That's
Let's see. You know, it's got some name actors. Kiefer Sutherland is in there.
Kiefer.
Mark Strong. You probably would recognize him in some other things.
Okay.
Yeah, but you may not know the name, but you would probably recognize who that is.
All right.
I think it's a good movie.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, Elise, do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, I'm feeling real left out because I did not come prepared with my forgiveness read.
Yes.
It's all right. We forgive you.
Yeah. I'm still trying to work on the Long John Silver's revelation. It's going to take me some time. It's a process.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, since Elise said that she's still working on Long John Silver's, we've got some listener mail that we want to share. Yeah, this is an email that came back about our Mandalorian and Justice episode from a while back. I don't remember when that came out, but it was a while back.
It's been a while, yeah.
January.
It definitely had a number attached to it.
It did. It was a number.
Number 9.
So this is, I really enjoyed this podcast in a painful way. How's that for tension? I grapple with the types of questions, and one idea in particular had not really given me pause the way it did when I heard it this time, about when equity is considered by some to give them disadvantage or make them feel as though they are being left out. Mercy for the abuser, for example, or the disadvantage being more so by the spreading of already scarce resources. How is that done from Jesus's perspective? Such a complex topic. And although I've not seen The Mandalorian, but now know who Baby Yoda or where Baby Yoda came from, thank you for that valuable bit of pop culture. That's really what we're here for. Is,
sure.
I love that. That's the takeaway.
Hands down, I'm in the helmet off camp. And as it seems, you go back to the original application of some rules. It might be found to hold little weight in the overall value of the goals of the group or religion he was following. Maybe just a symbol that is overly stressed, but I can't imagine to what end. I really appreciate your efforts, time, and thoughtful conversations interspersed with talk about Reese's Pieces. Thank you very much for being on my side in that one. And other silliness. Thank you from Annette Howe. So Annette, thank you so much for sharing
your
thoughts. We'd love to hear from you all too. So if you liked what you heard today or in any of our episodes.
Or didn't like it.
If you didn't like it, just forgive us and send us a note anyway.
Yes, right. And forget.
Right.
Forget it happened.
Right.
Let us know. Also, Reese's Pieces or Reese's Pieces?
Reese's Pieces.
What do you want to do?
Listen, we went over this last time. In my head, I know that it is Reese's Pieces. I will always say Reese's Pieces.
Thank you. That was a really weak high five, but that's okay.
That's insane. I just want to say that.
Anyway, if you liked what you heard on this episode or any episode, be sure to share it out with friends. Send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com, just like Annette did, or just share this with everybody that you know, because we'd love to have you listen to us as well. I don't know why that was so funny. It's the same thing I say every
really
week.
Aggressive podcast sharing.
Share it. Share it with everyone.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. And in E.T., it's Reese's Pieces. It's the most... It's when it's the most forefront of pop culture. Is that movie.
Reese's Pieces. Right there. I think you said it. E.T., home.